Good evening and welcome to the second of our four live election forums this week on Raven Radio. Tonight I have in the studio a great mix of sitkins. They're all running for the assembly. There's two open seats and they're different people, but what they have in common is they all want to make Sitka a better place and they have ideas and questions. The thing, though, that's most important is your questions. We'd like you to call in and be a part of the conversation. 747-5877 is the number to call. News director Rob Woolsey and Winter News fellow Emily Russell are standing by on the phones. Again, that number is 747-5877. You can also, if you're by a computer and listening through our live stream, email your questions to news@kcaw.org. or post a comment to the forum thread on Raven Radio's Facebook page. Now, this isn't really a debate. We're not going to go Fox News style. This is more a discussion. It's a chance to kind of pass the baton from each person to get their take on various things. A reminder, too, Raven Radio's forum tomorrow will feature the three mayoral candidates, Mary Magnuson, Ben Maiasato, and Matthew Hunter. And Thursday night, I'll be back to host a discussion on ballot proposition one. Should Sitka raise the cap on the mill rate from 6 to 8 mills? We'll have supporters of the measure, opponents. We'll be talking about this tonight as well. Let's make some introductions first. So I have in front of me, going from left to right, Aaron Bean. Aaron is a charter captain and a prospective marijuana business owner. He's also a former police officer, natural resource specialist with Sitka Tribe, and commercial fisherman born in Sitka. Hey, Aaron, how you doing?
Well, hello. Howdy. One correction. I am a marijuana business owner.
You are a marijuana business owner.
Yes.
End of sentence. Period. Exclamation point. Underline. Thank you very much, Aaron.
Yeah.
And to Aaron's right, we have Alexander Allison. He is, feel free to run a correction on me too.
Sure.
Language arts teacher at Blatchley Middle School for the past 15 years. Moved to Sitka in 1998 and worked previously as a commercial troller, charter fisherman, and a truck driver. In the summer season, you operate a water taxi service. How are you doing this morning?
That is correct. Thanks for having us.
Great. And to his right, we have Aaron Swanson. Aaron was elected to the Sitka Assembly in 2013. In that time, he's been a voice on the Assembly, liaison to the Historic Preservation Commission and the Police and Fire Commission. Aaron drives trucks for Arrowhead Transfer. Aaron, how are you doing today?
How are you?
Doing good. Here, get right up to that microphone.
I'm doing good.
That's super important. Thank you so much. And then Evie Kinnear is also in the studio. She is the co-founder of the Fortress of the Bear, a rescue facility for orphan bear cubs. Was a middle school teacher in LA before coming to Sitka in 2002 and served a 3-year term on the Sitka Convention and Visitors Bureau. Evie, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. And then Kevin Knox is also here running for assembly. He is a commercial pilot and stay-at-home dad. He served for 3 years on the Port and Harbors Commission this past year as chair and also serves on the board for the Baranoff Barracuda Swim Club and the Southeast Alaska Aviation Association. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Emily. Hello, Sitka.
Hello, Sitka. So we're going to start out by giving everybody just 2 minutes to offer an opening statement. I gave a little background, which you're welcome to reiterate as much as you like. But what I think is important is to tell people why you're running. What is your motivation for being on the assembly? We're going to start with Aaron and then pass the baton for the first person to answer the question to Aaron's right. So Aaron, you're up.
All right. Well, first of all, thank you everyone for tuning in and listening. My name is Aaron Bean. I'm 37 years old. I was born and raised here in Sitka. The main reason I'm running is because I believe that there's time for political action, like I said in my candidacy statement, that could really help Sitka move forward and get through these tough times that we're going to be facing over these next few years. as I also mentioned, I think that there's a few things that the city perhaps could do politically that could help that happen. So I'm not going to take the full 2 minutes. I'm really excited to hear from you guys. Please don't hesitate to call in and ask questions. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Aaron. That was Aaron Bean running for assembly, and Alexander Allison, you're up.
Yeah, hi. So I'm a language arts teacher. I'll start out with a literary reference. I don't mind. Mark Twain said of the ancient Greeks that the last person who should become a politician is someone who wants to be a politician. That politicians should be dragged screaming and kicking to their jobs. And you know, we don't really have a mechanism in place for that. And I want to be elected, but I'd probably put it at 51-49. I feel like I want to be elected, but I also want to see the will of the people of Sitka happen. I have two main parts of my platform. One is blue jobs, or the blue sector of our economy, any part of the economy associated with marine industry or anything marine services or you know, nonprofits associated with marine training, any of those. I'm mostly interested in advocating for the blue economy by getting a haul out built out at Sawmill Cove. And then the other part of my platform is transparency, so that people in Sitka can really understand what's going on in government. So those are the two things I'm really running on. And if people are interested in them, I hope they'll vote for me.
That's Alexander Allison. And Aaron Swanson, you're the incumbent on the Assembly, looking to serve another three-year term. Why are you running for re-election?
Well, I'm running for re-election because I think we're looking at some difficult times ahead, probably within the next, you know, 5 years at the most. I'm running to be continue to be the voice of reason that I've been when I do speak, and I think that experience is going to be needed within the next couple years.
All right, that's Aaron Swanson. He is the incumbent running for Assembly. And Evie Kinnear, why are you running? And tell us a little bit about yourself, too.
I came to Sitka in 2002. I moved up here from Portland. I had lived in L.A. in an earlier part of my life. And when I came here with to meet Les and to start Fortress of the Bear, we kind of gave up everything to do that. And I started a business here in addition to Fortress, which was Hook, Line, and Bobbin, and I did embroidery work, and that's, you know, kept us alive for a while until I didn't have time to do that anymore. I'm doing this because I want to bring a dynamic to the table that I don't think exists. I'm a senior. I'm a woman. I don't want to play that card. Somebody gave me a little bit of flack about that today, but I think that's an aspect that's needed on any forum, and I think I want to challenge some things that are the status quo, and shake things up a little bit.
Evie Kinnear, thank you so much, and Kevin Knox, tell us about yourself and why you're running.
Well, as I've told people over the past several weeks, as we've been out there talking with people, my family moved here in 1973 when my dad took a job with the Manichcom Hospital. And it was December, and we drove off the ferry, and both my parents, David and Kara, both swore that if they could have afforded it, they would have turned right around and gone back to Southern California. But it only took like a month, and all of a sudden they were in love with this place. I was 2.5 years old. My sister was born soon after that, in case anybody didn't know. I'm the brother of Erica. coming back home after being away from after college and after graduating from high school from Sitka High, coming back home, I oftentimes was referred to, "Oh, you're Erica's brother." Yes, I am Erica's brother. I've spent a lot of time since being back doing service work, working for the swim club that I grew up with, working with the Southeast Alaska Aviation Association, and as you mentioned earlier, also with the Port and Harbors Commission for the past 3 years, and currently as chair. I think one of the reasons that I chose to throw my name in the hat was because we do have a lot of change coming up, and being a part of this community and serving it for a while since I've been back, I really wanted to be a part of that dialogue and discussion. And one of the things that I feel like I bring to the table and would bring to the Assembly table is somebody who will listen, somebody who's going to work really hard. I've been out over the past 3 weeks meeting with people and talking with everybody about what they see in their future of Sitka. And I'd like to be able to continue that.
All right, Kevin Knox, thank you for being in here. I know how much courage this takes to come on. Raven Radio is one thing. To run for the Assembly and put yourselves out there is totally else. It takes a lot of courage. It shows a lot of love for this place. And that is one thing we all for sure share in common. We have our first question. It comes from Tyler, and the person to be answering it first, Alexander Allison. So the question is, What is your number one specific priority? And this question is actually harder than it is than it looks on first glance, because there's a lot of things. But what is the thing when you hit the ground you want to focus on?
Okay.
Go for it.
Yeah, that's easy. That's a haul out, full services haul out at Sawmill Cove to support our fleet, to keep our fleet at home in the off season, to keep our kids in schools, our fishing kids in schools here. I want that. I want those kids to grow up and be able to have jobs in town. I think that getting a commercial, like a full services haul out, very similar to the one they have down in Wrangell, should be our number one priority.
And Aaron?
My number one priority is probably going to be trying to find a way to raise revenues to balance the budget in case the property tax mill rate does not pass, because we're looking at a $2.5 million deficit coming up for the next fiscal year that we're going to have to start crunching some numbers and figuring out a way to raise those revenues.
Is there, within the desire to raise revenue, a specific source of revenue you're especially interested in?
There's no really specific source that I'm interested in. I'm looking at many things, including cuts. There are some revenue streams that have been tossed around at assembly meetings. One would be a bulk fuel excise tax. Another one would be vehicle registration tax, which is something that I wasn't entirely in favor of when I ran for assembly the first time. But if we can't find a way to come up with funds, we're going to have to start looking.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some of those. And I think it's so interesting that you're open to these possibilities, having served on the assembly for 3 years. Evie, what about you? What is your number one priority if elected?
I would like to keep the future alive in Sitka. And by that, I mean keep young people here. And I think one of the ways that we can do that is to keep costs controlled in some kind of way. And the way that I see that happening is to build up our electric consumption so that the individuals aren't hit quite as hard with that. And I would like to see the city start phasing out all the gas-driven vehicles and make it electric, to make all the buildings that are in the city that are city-owned on electricity. And I have a lot of different ideas of ways that we can make it more affordable. One is to, you know, look at ways to having a living wage for people that are working so that they can afford to stay here.
Thanks, Evie. If you're just tuning in, I'm here with the five candidates for Sitka's Assembly. They're running for two open seats, and they're taking your questions. Call 747-5877 with those questions. Kevin Knox, the question is, what is your number one priority if elected to the Assembly?
Well, I'm gonna echo a few of the things that have already been tossed around here. I think Aaron is you know, right on, and you know, obviously being on the Assembly already, he's seen this picture over the last budget cycle, having a running a deficit, and this next one being even larger. We really do need to look at both. Probably some cuts, but also some revenue enhancements within the city. But we also had to be realistic about, you know, additional monies coming in through, say, our electric fund or by selling additional electricity. Some industry is going to be beneficial there, and then others aren't going to really bring in all that much. So we do need to look at you know, a broad spectrum there. Equity is going to be probably at the forefront of my mind within a lot of this. We can't drive out people that are on the fringe. We need to look at ways that we can balance our tax structure, you know, throughout taxing, you know, increasing taxes on our sales tax would be disastrous for a lot of young people here and people living on the fringe, just because it tends to hit them harder than it does others that are in the upper incomes. You know, too much additional property taxes are definitely going to be hard too, because that tends to trickle down. But we definitely need to look at ways to increase our revenues, and making cuts is going to be a part of our reality as well. though we can't afford to make, you know, big cuts of $2.5 million, which could mean up to 15 jobs in this town, and that would be awful. I wouldn't want to make those. I wouldn't want to look at those families. That would be a very, very hard thing to do, to take out that many jobs.
Yeah. I think it's safe to say that no matter what, the job of the assembly is really tough.
Yeah.
They have to make some really hard judgment calls. Aaron Bean, what is your number one priority if elected to the assembly?
Yes, again, Aaron Bean here. If I'm elected for assembly, I mean, one of the top priorities in my mind is trying to lower the cost of living here. That isn't something that could be done necessarily single-handedly with one idea. This is going to take lots of public input. And one of the things that I feel that I'm stressing in my campaign is that I really feel like I want to be somebody that the public can reach out to and be part of the process. I know Sitka has a lot of good ideas. A lot of people don't feel comfortable coming forward with them publicly. I will be the person to address it. I mean, if people can address me in private and give me ideas, if we could talk them out, and if it's going to work, let's do it. I mean, this is my opinion anyway. So, again, top priority would be trying to lower cost of living. How that could happen, the way I would see it, you know, as everyone said here, people are being forced to leave Sitka, and no one wants that. Nobody benefits from that. People don't want to leave here, and they have to because they can't afford it. If we could find ways to tap into the resources that we have right here, you know, the fish, through the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, and the land here that the city and this assembly would have the authority to make available to people at just raw land to bring some revenue in. Let's get the bulk water contract. Let's put an RFP out. I mean, these are just a few things that I think could happen.
Yeah. It is indeed hard to focus on one. But it seems like what you're saying is to address this issue with our economy.
Oh, yeah. Well, lower the cost of living through the means that I was saying.
Yeah.
I wasn't saying it. I didn't want to put a broad stroke. Well, lower the cost of living. Well, it's easy to say that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make Sitka more affordable. But how?
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are just a few solutions.
Yeah. You know, I have this figure that the Alaska Department of Labor is projecting that our current rate of migration, taking out births and deaths and people who move here, 25 people are projected to leave Sitka every year at the current rate we're going. And I think a big question is how to keep these folks in. But I want to pivot to another question that was asked by a listener prior to us coming on air. So it looks like, to jump off what Kevin's saying, that no matter what, just to break down this issue, some cuts are going to have to be made. So let's talk about that component first. The city made $1 million worth of cuts this past year. They cut 5.5 positions. This is visibly seen in a smaller police department, a smaller fire department, the library being closed on Sundays, reduced travel to city staff. There's several other things that are less or more visible. And Hugh Bevan wants to know, what would be a process you'd use to prioritize city services in order to figure out where to make cuts and where to allocate funds? How would you go about that if elected? Because that is part of the challenge of the assembly. So I think the first person to answer this question is Aaron. Go ahead, Aaron.
Okay.
Swanson.
Well,
thank you, Aaron Swanson.
Probably start by looking at, I'd leave public safety alone. That one has been cut already the previous year where we lost our assistant fire chief and some police personnel. A majority of the budget is made up basically of wages. So once you cut out the middleman, then you're going to have to start going towards streets. Streets are going to have to be put on hold. Any public infrastructure that is on the chopping block to be brought as the project of the year, I would have to put them on hold. I'd put those projects on hold before I cut jobs. But eventually it's going to come down to, do we want to have paved roads? Do we want to have running water, flowing sewer? That's ultimately where it's going to come down to.
Can I fold one more question in with this one, which is, are there any city services you want to see privatized? So there's this question of how you distribute cuts and allocate money, but anything you'd want to see the city privatize?
If it was going to be privatized, it'd have to be privatized to do it cheaper than what we're doing it at right now. Somebody actually mentioned this to me before, that all the streets before were actually done in-house. That's, you know, could be something that we have to look at. Instead of paying companies to pave the roads, we might have to do them ourselves.
Thanks, Aaron Swanson. So, Evie Kinnear, same question.
I think you start at the top. I think that it's always the biggest expense of any organization, business, is salaries. It's just the way it is. So who's getting the bigger salaries? And how important are they? You can't make money if you don't spend money. So if we took, I don't know what it would take, and brought in an absolutely impartial consultant to look at the way this city is run, to look at the breakdown of dollars and see if indeed this, because every year the budget goes up more and more. We just hired an extra assessor to go out and spend an inordinate amount of time reassessing all of the property. Well, that's ultimately going to bring in money, but was that the best thing that we could do? And in the meantime, we've taken some money out of the economic fund to do that. Well, that's growth money too. So I would love to see somebody come in and, like I said, shift things around and say, this is what it takes. And I think it takes a strong business mind to run a city. It is actually a business, even though, I mean, there's hearts and minds involved, and there's fire departments and schools and all kinds of services that are absolutely essential. It still has to be looked at from a financial point of view in order to thrive.
The number to call is 747-5877. We're having a pretty interesting discussion on how, as an assembly member, you would determine where to make cuts if needed, which is something that the next assembly will very likely have to do. Kevin Knox, same question.
It's a really interesting question, a very difficult one, obviously, for any body to deal with, especially a political body, because any department, any particular program comes with a constituency behind it, whether it's just a constituency of workers that, you know, serve that department, or it's a constituency of people who benefit from that service. I think it's, you know, actually looking at any one particular group is it's always hard. I agree with what Aaron Swanson had to say there, and that I would probably hesitate most on cutting jobs, actual wages, living wage jobs in this town, and look at more infrastructure type things. Though then the question goes back to the people that we serve, then, is, you know, how far is far enough? the other piece of this is that Evie alluded to this, that we need to look at the top. I wouldn't agree with that at all. I don't think that our top salaries within the city are ones that we would want to look at reducing. If we do that, we attract less quality applicants to those positions. If we weren't able to offer the kind of money that we, you know, did to, say, Brian Hansen, he would not have taken the job. And in fact, that position is not even very highly paid when you look at other attorneys in this state, at city attorneys in this state, for that matter. It's, you know, it's down towards the middle, if not middle bottom. And I'm pretty sure our city administrator position isn't, you know, one of the top paid salaries either in this state. So I would really hesitate in that, because I think, you know, we we don't attract the right people then to do the job, to be able to run the business as it needs to be run.
And what about outsourcing or privatizing city services? And Evie, I don't know if you had a chance to really answer this either, but do you have any thoughts on that?
That's also a very difficult question. Like Aaron said, it doesn't make any sense. If you're not going to save any money on it, why would you do it? Even if you're only saving some money on it, there's a lot of expense that goes into actually switching over to those services, and maybe you might see some saving realization long down the line, but at what cost to jobs or to the actual service? That would be something that you would have to really take a very hard look at.
Yeah, I realize it's a tough question because you haven't.
Yeah, it's a very hypothetical.
You haven't gotten in there. But Evie, yeah, do you have any thoughts on that? Or
I think we're doing that a little bit already. I think I mentioned this at the chamber that I don't know why it happened or where it happened, but the electrical poles that were all put out on Sawmill Creek Road were all done by an outside electric company. But that was hired by the city. I mean, we do hire people already to do that. I don't know. It's hypothetical.
Definitely. Aaron Bean, same question. This question of cuts and potential privatization, how one would even go about even thinking your way through that. How would you think your way through that?
Well, the way that I would think my way through it would be to sit down and look at, first of all, what we've spent in previous history, what we're spending today. I would like to look at what Sitka looks like side by side with other communities in Southeast Alaska with similar populations. I did go down to the library and I took a look at just the general fund since 1980 in my lifetime. And we've gone from $3 million back then, which I guess would adjust to about $9 million today in 1980. So $9 million in 1980 up to $28 million, I believe, this last year. So the population is flatlined. You said it yourself, we're losing 25 people annually. So no doubt that perhaps cuts need to be made. Where they need to be made needs to be looked at with a fine-tooth comb and compared side by side. In terms of privatizing, let's see. One thing that comes to my mind growing up here in Sitka is, like Aaron Swanson had mentioned, we used to have graders that would grade, every other week. Sometimes we'd get away with not having it that often in the summertime, but they would be through here grading all the time, back and forth. If there was road work that needed to be done, the city had the knowledge, skills, and ability on staff to make that happen. So if you have a municipality that has the equipment, the staff, and the know-how, why wouldn't we utilize that? I'm not saying every job needs to be privatized. Perhaps maintenance and just some jobs. Let's get a percentage out there. 50% of jobs that could be handled in-house should be. The taxpayers need to be getting what they're paying for. Another thing in the utility department, I suppose, would be to look at the possibility of selling this utility. I don't think that it's marketable right now because obviously we're facing a lot of problems with being able to make it pencil out. But I don't think any discussion should be off the table at this point.
Again, that number to call is 747-5877. This is your chance to ask the people who will represent you your questions. Call 747-5877 or email your question to news@kcaw.org. Oh, we've got some questions. Great. Alexander Allison, yeah. This same question. Go for it.
Yeah. Well, in the school district, we've already experienced some of this with freezes on salaries, and we've made a lot of cuts already. And like a lot of these people already pointed out, I think it's probably a likely chance that a lot more of that will come. But we don't want to do that first. I'd like to see some of the projects that these guys were talking about as far as the road work, keeping that in-house. Right now, I'm afraid that when I look at it historically, I got here in 1998, the market crashed in 2008. And, you know, back then, oil was still pretty high. And we were riding high in Sitka. You know, we had a lot of really great services. Things were being taken care of. The grounds looked fantastic. I mean, it was great. But the market crashed. And we're not in, you know, oil tanked. And so we don't have the revenue that we used to have. And I think we need to look at that realistically and maybe adjust our belt straps accordingly, unfortunately. So it's a dire outlook. I, in the chamber conference, alluded to some chess strategy. And I'm going to do that again here because I feel like if we're not careful, we may end up trading down. We're in a defensive situation here, but unless we make a strategic move, after we make our moves, we're really not going to be very much further down the line. We're not going to really enhance our position in the end game. And so I think we need to make a strategic move. And so Evie pointed out that you have to spend money to make money. And I'm not a money spender, but I definitely feel like, you know, rather than do either the grocery tax incentive or the electrical funds stabilization, I'd like to see that money go into something that's going to create value for Sitka, for Sitkins. I think we need to take more of a kind of a corporate model into mind. Have you again referred to this? I think Sitkins are shareholders, and we need to seek as many ways as possible to return value to them.
Yeah, or look to game theory for ideas about how to solve some of these problems, because it is a little bit unprecedented in Sitka in a lot of ways. That just the current climate. We have a call on line one. This is Dave. Dave, welcome to Raven Radio's Assembly Call-In Forum. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Dave, what's your question for these fine folks?
Well, you know, I'm kind of wanting to ask a vague question that reflects back on history. And I'm looking at the early 90s when the pulp mill closed, and really nothing has taken the place of the pulp mill. We haven't had anything that would replace 400 year-round jobs. And honestly, I think that's part of Sitka's, you know, financial woes today. Do we have any ideas willing to, you know, be put on the table by the assembly members or these people running for office where they would court businesses to come into Sitka or court employers to come to Sitka, do small-scale manufacturing or anything like that? I know it's a vague question, and I apologize for that, but frankly, I'm looking back 20 years and seeing a connection between what happened in 1994 and what's going on today.
Yeah, Dave, that looking back is actually really valuable, and thank you so much for calling in. Dave's question, what would you do to court businesses to Sitka and people who could have Sitkins looking to other Sitkins for goods and services, essentially? I think the baton passes to Evie. You're up. Wait, let me get your mic up. Ooh, now you're up. Go ahead.
Okay. I actually have quite a number of ideas. Whether they can ever be brought to fruition or not is another question. I'm going to bring up the really bad word, which is a downtown dock, is one of the things that would bring a lot more money to Sitka, because we'd get a lot more people coming in off of the cruise ships that we're getting. I know that was on the table a while ago, and we, you know, made a decision that, you know, I don't even think it made it to, I think it did make it to a vote at one point, and it was turned down. But I think it can be relooked at. I think that we have to offer companies a reason to come here. I at one point, FedEx looked at Sitka as a place to be a home port kind of place, and we didn't sweeten the deal. We have to sweeten the deal when these people want to come in, because even if we have to build a building or we have to make their rent lower for X amount of time for a business to come in here, getting people working pays off exponentially over the years. So anybody that's looking to come here, or we can court, and we have to do that. I know they're doing that through the Sawmill Cove Industrial or Gary Paxton board now. And they're working pretty hard, working on the haul out idea, building a dock out there, a multi-purpose dock, so that they can do that. I know the water is an issue still, but yeah, thank you.
Thanks so much. Kevin Knox, what same question, which is how can we court a new business or former businesses to Sitka? Yeah.
Well, first off, Dave, thanks for calling in, and it is a great question. one of the things that kind of popped into my head, though, as you were asking the question, was that we haven't seen, you know, a big growth to replace the mill. And the first thing my mind went to, of course, is Silver Bay Seafoods out there. They actually employ a little over 400 people at that plant, although, you know, many of them are on a seasonal basis, so it doesn't quite equate to the you know, the days of the pulp mill. But that was one way that the city was able to bring in jobs. Silver Bay is actually looking at ways to keep some of those seasonal workers here longer throughout the year by, you know, adding value to the product that they put out, you know, canning more, getting more, you know, frozen prepared stuff that goes out to various markets throughout the year so that they can kind of keep things going. They actually bring in fish from other places, bringing them in from Bristol Bay and some of their operations down in California to be able to keep this plant, you know, operational longer throughout the year. And I think if we can continue to encourage them, not get in their way to do that, you know, that's great. Another thing that's going on here, you know, everybody knows with the revitalization of the SJ campus, we're seeing more and more year-round activities happen at that campus, and that's bringing in quite a few dollars. It's not, it's a different dollar, a different tourism dollar than we've, you know, traditionally seen from people coming off of the cruise ships. These people come in for longer periods of time. They spend more in our restaurants, spend more in our hotels, and they're actually getting out and spending more in our businesses from a per capita basis. And I think if we, you know, continue to encourage that, I think it's great.
Thanks so much, Kevin. Aaron Bean, same question.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, Dave. So in the 90s, yes, I was a younger child in 1990, and I remember when the mill closed, in fact, and, you know, a lot of my friends left town from school, so I remember it well. But to speak a little bit to Kevin's point, I think that Silver Bay is doing quite a bit out there, but at the same time, you know, the IFQs were implemented. Anyone who's commercial fished knows what they are. Independent fishing quota, the NIFs, and the state decided that they would limit the amount of fishermen that would participate in the fisheries. So this, right around that time, I think that, you know, our economy was also doing really well because of the fishing atmosphere that was around, you know, that took place year-round. But that's a completely different subject.
Yeah,
but that kind of speaks to what one of my ideas would be, is to get some of that wealth that's caught here and bring it ashore to people who don't have quota or can afford it, not because they don't have the knowledge, skills, and ability to go out there and catch the fish themselves and haven't done it for years. You know, a lot of people have deckhand on these longline boats, but, you know, at the end of the day, they walk off with a crew share and operate smaller boats. But let's give some opportunity to the people that are here year-round and that keep the lights on. But, yeah, thanks for the call.
Thanks so much, Aaron. We have our phone line's open for you to ask questions to the Assembly, 747-5877. Alexander Allison, go for it.
Yeah, well, I'll approach this one from a coaching analogy. You know, when you lose your starter, you bring in your backup. And our starter was the pulp mill. And our backup is actually a heck of a backup. It's our fleet. And it's not even a backup. It's actually an amazing fleet. We have the number one fleet in Southeast Alaska by poundage. No other community catches as much fish as we do. Not Petersburg, not Wrangell, not Cordova, not Juneau, not Ketchikan. We have the number one fleet. We even catch more fish than Bristol Bay. We have an amazing home fleet. And they're our backups. And we need to go to them. And we need to support them. And we need to expand their influence in our economy in many ways by, you know, really looking hard at, do we need to have all these harbor rate increases? Can we put in a facility where they can spend their money in Sitka instead of going to Wrangell? You know, we had half a dozen limit sanders go to Wrangell to get $50,000 paint jobs last summer. And that doesn't even, part of the equation right there, doesn't even include the house that the captain had to rent so that his crew could stay down there. And some of them are going to be down there long enough to really take the kids out of school. So we have a heck of a backup. We have the fishing fleet, and we need to do everything we can to get them into a leading role and support them as much as we can.
Thanks so much. Alexander Allison, Aaron Bean, what would you do to court business to Sitka, or where would you focus your energy? Aaron Bean, Aaron Swanson, I'm sorry. So many Aarons. Aaron Swanson, currently on the assembly, how would you answer Dave's question?
Well, Dave, we've kind of actually trying to been do this right now. We've been sending out for, proposals to ship bulk water out of Sitka. I don't know if that's the long-term answer, but we are currently looking at building a dock out at the Salmo Cove Industrial Park, Gary Paxson Industrial Park, and then thing to hopefully lure in new business industry. I'd say, we could probably offer reduced rates on the land out at the industrial park, even maybe some cheaper electric rates and possibly even some tax incentives to kind of open it up for these industries to come here. Most of them, I think, are afraid to come here because Sitka is basically a logistics nightmare, and everything to ship out of here is super expensive, even getting the stuff here.
Thank you so much, Aaron Swanson. And thanks for this great conversation. Just talking about innovation and ideas, it's important. I wish I could have it every week on Raven Radio. The number to call is 747-5877. We have a caller on line one. This is Mark. Mark, you are on the air. And what's your question for these assembly candidates?
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank all of you for your willingness to serve, because it is a thankless job, and I, for one, appreciate your willingness to do it. My question is more of a global one. I'd like to know what you think the roles and the responsibility of the assembly is, and the roles and the responsibility of the administrator is, and the relationship between the two.
Thank you so much, Mark. So Mark's question, what is the roles and responsibility of the assembly, the administrator, and what is the relationship between the two? Kevin, you are the first person to answer this question. Go for it.
This is a actually a really interesting question in that over the last probably 5 or 6 months or so in assembly sessions, this has been changing a little bit. More and more big picture responsibility has been coming upon the assembly to look at how does Sitka run its business or what's its bigger global picture, I guess. And they've looked more towards the administrator to implement that global picture and that bigger picture. And I felt really refreshed by that movement. I think, taking a lot of the more daily tasks or, the smaller things off of the table for the assembly to have to decide on, are we going to do this or are we going to do that? Or are we going to, allow certain things to happen that, are exceptions or not. It's been nice to see that's come off of their plate and then, moved over more towards staff. And I really am looking forward to the fact that the assembly will have more of a big picture role in, creating Sitka, into the future.
Aaron Bean?
Yes.
How would you like to answer Mark's question?
I would like it asked again.
The question is, what can you define what the assembly's role and responsibilities are, the city administrator's role and responsibilities, and what is the relationship between the two?
Well, let's hope that the relationship between the two is a really cohesive one where there's lots of communication, for starters. It is my belief that the assembly is there to reconcile the duties and the obligations that the municipality puts on the people through taxation and whatever the other case may be. But to answer the question simply, the administrator is to oversee the city. The assembly is to represent the people and also direct the city administration, if you will.
And the relationship between the two?
Like I said,
cohesive.
Yes.
Gotcha. Thank you so much, Aaron Bean.
Thank
Alexander
you.
Allison.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of, when it comes to democracy, I'm kind of a fundamentalist, and I believe in the will of the people. And I think that on large policy issues, the administrator is there to take the direction of the assembly. I think the assembly should give direction to the administrator. Day-to-day things, I'm perfectly content with having the administrator take care of those. But when it gets right down to it, I think the administrator serves the assembly.
All right, that was Alexander Allison and Aaron Swanson. Relationship between assembly, administrator, their roles and responsibilities.
Well, the administrator is an employee of the city assembly. It basically takes two assembly members to tell the city administrator what to do. But the role of the administrator would be to see that the day-to-day operations of the city are run the way that they're supposed to be run, and the assembly is the overseer of the administrator ultimately. So that is the relationship between the assembly and the administrator.
Thank you, Aaron. It's Aaron Swanson. We are talking to the five candidates for assembly. The number to call to offer your questions is 747-5877. We're going to pick up this question, this larger topic about Sitka's economy and what can be done. We've talked about cuts. Let's talk about revenue. I'm sorry. Oh, Evie, you didn't answer. I'm so sorry. Evie, the question is all about roles and responsibilities of the city administrator and assembly. Thank you for keeping me on track. You're already going to be very good assembly members, and I will be covering the meetings wondering what is going on. Go ahead, Evie.
I think, obviously, since the assembly is a voted-in place that, you know, we're representing or hopefully representing what the people are wanting, but I think it's often hard to know what's going on with the administration if you're only talking to them. So I think it's important that we get, as an assembly, if I was on the assembly, that I could talk hopefully privately to some of the other heads of different departments to make sure that they all felt that what they were asking for was being fairly represented through the administration. Talking one-on-one is not the same as understanding the entire dynamic of the relationships that go on. And I think that things can get a little bit top-heavy with that without knowing what's going on.
That's Evie Kinnear running for the assembly. And the question I want to ask you now is, well, first to just broach this larger conversation about revenue and how to bring money into Sitka or generate money within Sitka. So the assembly appointed seven citizens to come up with solutions, and their proposal was to raise the cap on the mill rate from 6 to something, just to look, take a hard look at property taxes. And their proposal is pass this and to tie in basically policies that would make the cost of living go down or at least become a little more manageable. The assembly approved an ordinance that would dedicate 1 mil worth of that property tax to the electric fund. And the goal there is to prevent rate increases from going up super high. Some early projections from the electric department last meeting were as high as 20% if certain things shake out. If the electric load dives down, if no revenue comes into the electric fund, that is the rate that's going to have to be set. So the question is, and it's from Rich McClear, where do you stand on the mill rate vote? Rich emailed this question in just a few moments ago. You can email your questions to kcaw.org. And I think the first person to ask is Aaron Bean. Aaron, how are you going to vote on this question?
Well, I would vote no. I discussed...
And why? Yeah, that's an important follow-up.
I'm gonna follow up with that. Thank you. At the chamber meeting, I think I was... Evie may have been also... I can't remember exactly. But anyway, now, my answer is no, simply because I feel that we're not going to tax our way out of this issue. If it's about a reappropriation of 1 mil toward the electric fund from taxes that are already being paid, you know, you may have me vote yes on something like that. But you're not going to hear me at any point without looking to other means by ways of cuts or economic development. You know, let's get the bid back out for this bulk water contract or something along those lines before we talk about increasing taxes.
Okay.
Because ultimately, it's not going to help people's cost of living. If anything, it's going to make it worse. And I have an explanation for that.
Oh, sure.
As well, if you'd like to hear it.
Go
real quickly.
For it. Yeah.
increasing the taxes on property is going to be indirectly making our grocery bills bigger, I'd imagine, because the property owners aren't going to simply absorb that cost and not have it reflected in the prices that we see on the shelves. And the same goes for people that are renting places here in Sitka that have landlords that have to pay these taxes. Well, odds are they're not going to absorb that cost. Otherwise, the cost would be cheaper than the rent is as it stands. So that's why I would vote no. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Aaron Bean. Alexander Allison, same question. How are you going to vote and why?
I'm going to vote yes on Prop 1. And I think it just boils down to it's a whole lot easier to fix the train while it's still on the tracks. We have been having a pretty easy ride, before the market crashed, before oil crashed. We had it pretty easy. And now we got to step up and take responsibility, and we got to maintain quality of life, because if this train ends up in the ditch and we kind of lose that quality of life, I think we're going to lose a lot of things that make this town attractive to people.
And Aaron Swanson, the same question. How are you going to vote? Go ahead.
Well, Rich, I'm not sure how I'm going to vote, if I'm going to vote yes or no. I do support it going before the public. I think that's going to be our best way to figure out if this is something that the citizens want us to do to try and balance this budget and make our infrastructure good for another 20 years. I still haven't decided if I'm going to vote yes or no, but I could go either way.
And Aaron, I think you highlighted something really important, which is that Sickens have a choice, and the Assembly has put forth a choice to them that was generated through a lot of discussion that you were a part of. And the election, by the way, is taking place October 4th, and this question will appear on the ballot. Aaron, is there something else you wanted to say?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to chime in on what Aaron,
sure.
What Mr. Bean said about if this passes, how it'll be passed on in possibly grocery bills. If the electric rates have to increase by 20%, I guarantee you that you're going to feel that in your grocery bill as well.
That's a good point. Evie mm-hmm. Kinnear, how would you like to answer Rich's question?
I've always stated that I'm not in support of this. And it's not that I don't think that, that maybe one mill down the road or something like that might help. But I question, and I stated this in my statement, I question whether what has been put into the public is we're going to cut schools, we're going to cut libraries, we're going to cut things that are highly visible to everybody, and that makes everybody scared. And I think that that's a tactic, and I think that things aren't as bad or unfixable. I think things are fixable. And I think there's possible ways, lots of possible ways to generate revenue. And I don't think it's by taxing people more.
The number to call, 747-5877. We have the Assembly candidates for another 35 minutes. They can answer any of your questions. This is Kevin Knox. Kevin?
So I'm
the question being, how are you going to vote on this property ballot initiative to raise the mill rate?
I will be voting yes on the mill rate increase. And I agree with Alexander in a lot of ways in that I feel like if we end up having to look at $2.5 million in cuts or, $2 million in cuts and some increases in sales tax or other taxes that, to make up any shortfalls, I think we do more damage to ourselves there in that they don't hit people, they hit people disproportionately, especially those on the low income or on the fringe. We will lose more people, I think, if we have a greater impact to their bottom lines. A property tax, it's been studied to death. Property taxes don't affect people on the fringes or in the lower incomes as greatly. And I just feel that's really important that we continue to look at that, that our tax equity in Sitka needs to be addressed.
Thank you so much, Kevin. So if this passes, Sitka will still need more sources of revenue. And we've talked about economic development in Sitka, but the Assembly also has in its tool bag things that it can do that doesn't rely on businesses changing what they do. There's taxes, there's rate increases, there's certain development initiatives that they could further. So I want to ask really broadly where the Assembly should look for revenue. And I want to just read you some things that came up at the Citizens Task Force meetings over the winter. Just some numbers that might be interesting for you. Maintaining a year-round sales tax at 6% would bring in $600,000. Increasing the sales tax cap so that like you have to pay sales tax on this amount of an item to $10,000 would raise between $200,000 and $400,000. An excise tax on bulk fuel would raise $1.2 million. Vehicle registration fee, Aaron, you mentioned this, would raise $450,000. How that would work is you pay $200 for every car for 2 years. Seniors would be exempt on that first vehicle. Eliminating the senior sales tax exemption would generate $500,000 for the city. Those are just some taxes that the Assembly has had before them. The Citizens Task Force, they also looked at land sales. What could be done to sell Sitka's land? They looked at leasing the rock quarry. These are just, I bring this up just to bring us all on the same page of what the Assembly has considered, though I'm looking for your ideas that are unmentioned or ones that, yeah, you're kind of, you think the Assembly should take a look at. So Alexander Allison, the question is for you.
Yeah. Well, I'm really glad we're listening to the Citizen Task Force now, because I've participated in community discussions, particularly with regards to the harbor. Over the years, I was also a Ports and Harbors Commissioner. I'm good friends with a number of people who were on the Ports and Harbors Commission back in the 90s. And at these Citizen Task Force that I was at, the resounding request by the group of people was to develop a haul-out out at Sawmill Cove. We have designated land. A previous caller wanted to know what we're going to do since the mill went down. Well, in Wrangell, they suffered for a really, really, really long time. It really hit them hard when their mill went down. And they turned to their haul out, which is a booming core to their economy right now. They're expanding by 100 acres this year. So we need to really, I think, in terms of paying attention to what our citizens are really asking for, what we have at our fingertips, what's available. This is available. We need to move on it. We've been sitting on it since the mill closed. But we just need to find the initiative.
Aaron Swanson, same question. Where should the future Assembly look for revenue?
Another revenue source other than the taxes that you listed could be land sales. I know the city has a lot of vacant land that they could be selling, and I have a feeling that coming down from the state with less and less money being handed out from them, that I could see the potential that the state is going to start giving the city land instead of finances to kind of try to make the budget.
Aaron, we had a listener actually email in with a specific question about land sales. So if that's something you're interested in, this person is wondering, what property would you be interested in selling, if you know, and if you don't, that's okay. Do you know how much revenue that would generate? I saw a figure saying for every $1 million worth of land sale, that would mean that would mean $500,000 for the city. But I'm fuzzy on these figures. So do you have any sense of, from having served on the Assembly, what the raw land revenue potential is?
I don't have the raw potential revenue stream, but I know that the city has a lot of land. And what land would I be willing to sell? I said this the first time I ran for the Assembly. I don't believe that the city belongs in real estate, so I would sell all of it.
All of it?
All of it.
Okay. Evie, this question of where else should the Assembly look for revenue? What options interest you?
Yeah, I think, I'm not big on taxation, although, in general. One of the things that our neighbors next door to us at Fortress is the recycle center. So what they do is they pick up over, you know, where they pick up all the recycling, they schlep it out to Fortress of the Bear, out past us, and then they take it all the way to the barge at the other end of the city. Now, I can't even imagine what that costs to do that, but I would think, since it's being run daily, several times a day, and I can't, and also what it's doing through the roads, there's a waste of money there, and especially when there's some land available right at Granite Creek now, and probably other places at that end of the road. So things like that could be looked at. We don't talk about tourism, you know, and there's money that comes from, you know, we get a head tax or some taxes off of the tourism. We're having a ship every day next year. Are there places there that we can garner more revenue? And these people are, you know, we've become a very popular destination again. And what can we do to make the most of that revenue?
Thank you. Kevin Knox, where should the Assembly look for revenue? Taxes, business ideas, what do you think?
Well, there's been a few ideas that have been thrown around here that are somewhat interesting. And some of the taxes that you have put out there were... you know, in the discussions around the grand bargain, were, you know, very robust discussions. And I think one of the things that kind of kept coming up that I started to clue in on is that, well, a lot of people don't like to think about, you know, additional taxation on whatever they're doing, whether it's property or buying, you know, a car to, you know, their pack of gum. One of the things that I think we really should look at is the potential of indexing any taxes that we might have come onto the table here in the short term. Being that, you know, we need to be able to look at what are our needs and what revenues do we need to support those needs, and then, you know, stay within those needs. I mean, I think the large sentiment of people is that, you know, government should not be growing any more than it is. And in fact, in the last 5 years, like you pointed out at the beginning of the show, we've actually shrunk the size of our budget a bit. And we need to stick with that trend, or at least, you know, keep it level or, you know, flat. So if we do look at additional taxes, indexing those to our needs. So, you know, if it is a cold winter and we sell a lot of electricity, then our taxes, you know, reflect that. The other taxes reflect that. Any additional increases, if it's a sales tax or a bulk fuel tax. And the bulk fuel tax is actually a really interesting one to index to our electrical rates. Then drives more people to use our electricity that we produce with our dam, as well as, you know, reflecting the fact that, well, okay, it's a warm winter, so we just haven't, you know, sold all that much electricity. We're going to need to generate a little bit more to be able to sustain our programs.
Yeah. Aaron Bean, same question.
Thank you. Thanks for the question. Emily.
My name is Emily.
I believe you posed this question.
I guess I did. Yeah. I'm the person who's calling in. But if you want to call in, 747-5877, help me out here. No.
Well, no, thank you. Thank you for the question and to get the topic started. I think, you know, what I hear a lot of around the table here tonight is just tax, 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 and, you know, ways to take people, take money out of people's pockets. One thing that I can say, obviously I don't stand for any more tax than it is, because we're in the position we're in because of the amount of money that we're spending, and if the money's there to spend, it's going to be spent. I don't see why a dollar in the city's hands is any different than a dollar in someone's walk on the street. I mean, it's the same dollar. It's worth the same amount of money. It's spent the same manner for the most part. So, no, I wouldn't agree with taxes right off to look for revenue streams. I think, again, we need to look at what we have. You know, it seems like right now it's an idea, and it's one that I know how to navigate. You know, the Fishery Management Council has a proposal process that the city could get behind and go. And if the support, I know there would be support that would put money in the pockets of the fishermen here instead of looking at ways to draw money out of their pockets. I like what Mr. Swanson said about, you know, sell it all. Sell it all. Who does it belong to? How do we incentivize people to get here? Well, you know what? Land is almost free in Sitka in a commercial zone. I know, you know, I'm hedging my bets with Juno with the marijuana company that I've started because of the future and looking down the road and, you know, where are we going? A lot of these shops close up and go to Huna. You got to ask yourself why. So that's how I would do it. Again, I would look at fish, I would look at our land, and I would use everything that we have here at our in our fingertips that we could actively, you know, we could do that as an assembly. We could make those things happen. These aren't just pipe dreams. So, yeah.
I want to turn attention to away from, well, it's all connected back to Sitka's economy, but to housing. Oh, I keep missing folks.
That's okay.
Am I missing? Oh, do you have a?
I got the deal. I got the chip right here.
You got the chip in front of me. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the question was about selling property.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, oh, okay. Yes.
What we could do to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Raise revenue.
Right. Well, okay. So I and Aaron responded by selling all the property, and I.
Sure.
I don't think that that's exactly what he meant. I mean, just to clarify, let's see if I might get it totally wrong. But there's definitely property that should be sold, maybe out Halibut Point Road or amongst the islands. But there's also definitely property that should not be sold. And that's critical waterfront property, like the potential land for a haul out. We had a privately owned haul out Halibut Point Road, which until 2008 hauled more boats than any other community in Southeast Alaska. They were the Halibut Point Marine. They were doing a fantastic job out there. The Sitka Shipwrights Co-op, a lot of guys were employed. Everybody knew of Sitka's reputation. It's a fantastic boat town for all the services that we provided. And then in 2008, that business changed hands, and the business model changed hands. And now we don't have that. Now we have people going to other places. So it would be a danger to privatize an opportunity to provide such a critical piece of infrastructure to the most important part of our economy, which is a fishing fleet and blue jobs.
Yeah. Alexander, thanks for elaborating on that. And I think, does it pass to Aaron, yes, next, to be the first answer?
No, he was the first, but do you want to amend that by any chance, Aaron? Did I get it mostly right?
You got it right.
Okay.
Okay. The question I have for you, this is again coming from me, is about housing. So how do you suggest the Assembly helps people navigate the housing market in Sitka? And you're welcome to talk about your own personal experiences navigating the housing market. I'm a renter. I rent property. I'm new to Sitka. And the challenge of staying here is finding a place to live. So how do you suggest the Assembly do that? They've recently dedicated or approved the building of a cottage neighborhood for our community land trust. On Sawmill Creek Road. That's one thing the Assembly has done, but yeah, that's the question. How would you help citizens navigate the housing market here in Sitka? I think, Aaron, you're first.
Okay, we had something that passed a while back where people could put small, tiny homes on their property and rent those out as long as they follow the building codes and the parking parameters. I think that is a great place to start if somebody has the ambition to put in a tiny home on their property. But like I said, you know, opening up land, residential lots, there's countless amounts of acres out HBR that could be used for residential lots. You let those go fairly cheap and people can afford to buy or build a house on there instead of paying $350,000 for a home.
Hi. Yeah, you know, I live in a manufactured home in a trailer park, which I never thought I was going to do. And I came in with a little bit of an attitude about that. But I love my house. And I love that I could afford it. It was under $100,000. And it's a beautiful home. It's 3 bedrooms, 2 baths, you know, all the amenities. And I don't know why we don't have more of that. I think that there's been a stigma attached to manufactured homes. I know the banks are reticent to loan any portion, you know, any fair portion of that the way that they do for homes. You know, like in home, you can put 10% down or 20% down, But in a manufactured home, you have to come up with about 35%, which puts a lot of people out of the market. So let's talk to some of the banks and do that, because you could take, I'm from the old school, you never sell land. You make money from land. Land is there as an investment. And so I don't sell land very easily if I'm a landowner, because that's an investment. But I make money from my land. And if the city has property that they can put these beautiful, and they're, you know, if you just go down south and look at some of these manufactured homes, they're gorgeous. And if we do that and, you know, put in all the LIDs and things that you need, then there's a way that you can, and talk to the banks and say, can we do a better loan program? I think you got affordable housing.
Kevin Knox, same question.
So this is, you know, something that I, at this point, well, before I was a stay-at-home dad and now I'm back in it, is something that I kind of live on a daily basis in a way, working in construction, building homes. One size doesn't fit all for everybody, obviously. Manufactured homes work for some people. Apartments are fine for others. You know, larger homes are what other people are looking for. One of the biggest pieces of the, our housing costs here are is the development cost. It just costs a lot of money to build a home here. We have to, as a city, would have to be very careful in releasing lands that we do own. It's not something that you're just going to let out wholesale, you know, throwing a massive amount of property out on the market for anybody to develop. That would, you know, it would crush our housing market. It would crush, you know, real estate. And you know, you want to talk about people leaving, they would certainly leave very quickly after that. They'd all be underwater on their loans for their the ones that they do own. But we do need to have more land available for sure. And the city with the bench lands was working on that. Unfortunately, with the landslide, that, you know, it's changed that landscape a lot. And Sound Development, when they were given that large piece of land to subdivide and then put out onto the market, they were not looking at really large profits for themselves. They had small pieces of land that were just about to be released just before the slide you know, they weren't going to be making a lot of money on. But because it cost them so much money to develop all of those, putting in all the LIDs, you know, putting in the roads and having pads ready for the potential of any development there, they were looking at having to, you know, sell some of these pieces of property for $75,000+. And for a small home, that's a pretty substantial piece of the cost there. I think, you know, getting into some of the other areas that we have available developable land, maybe back on No Name Mountain, you know, that's going to have the potential of bringing rock into town, you know, lowering the cost of rock so that, you know, development, the base development will be a little bit cheaper. And, you know, offering more land out there too for people to develop, I think that'll be a start. But like I said, I mean, it's not something that we can just look at a one-size-fits-all, and also certainly can't look at, you know, a wholesale release of all of our lands.
Aaron Bean, housing in Sitka.
Well, thank you for the question, and I respectfully disagree with Kevin on this one. I think that I've lived here my entire life, and I remember, back before any of the area behind the high school or the loop back there, Eliason Loop, I mean, all these developments have taken place. Those were large chunks of land that were bought privately, and, you know, the sky didn't fall. In fact, it created more housing. The main problem we're facing here is people are leaving. The market, the way it is going to work itself out. There's more homes on the market now for sale than there ever has been in the history of the city. There's something to be said for that. I don't believe that, I believe the market is going down, and I don't see it recovering anytime soon. And by trying our best to keep people in town by opening land and making people work with their neighbor to develop, you know, if it means that there's an acre, you own an acre between two people, and we have a mutual friend who we can parcel this out and maybe give him a lot for work and barter and trade. I mean, that's a possibility. That's the way it used to be around here. So that's my answer to that.
Alexander Allison.
So the question was, how do we make homes more affordable?
Yeah. How do we ensure that people have places to live here?
Right.
And help people navigate that desire to live here?
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to step back, take it one step before that, and just go back to saying that, you know, the best way for us to make homes affordable in Sitka is going to be to have living wage jobs so that people can afford homes. Because having more houses on the market than ever before doesn't really help if all the people looking for jobs are just people who work here in the summertime or work in a fish plant, or, you know, it doesn't help them. So we need to do more about that. Also, in terms of the city selling land, I like the idea in principle, but we got a lot of factors to consider now with landslide liability, with flood liability. There's a lot of dynamics changing there that we need to be pretty careful about in terms of exposing the city to liability. I had a great conversation today with Jay Clifton out at Precision Boatworks while he was working on his aluminum trolling poles. And his big idea was put float homes out in Herring Cove. And I thought it was a fantastic idea. Kind of like Seattle, put docks out there, put barges out there. The city kind of moved in that direction as far as coming up with a float home concept. But then it got bogged down in regulations. If you go and you look for what it needs to be in order to build, you know, you're going to need some, you need a lot of money. It's not going to be affordable. So we need to kind of reconceptualize what that waterborne option for us might be that would be a lot more affordable for us.
Thank you. This is all really interesting. And I have another question from someone who wrote in on Facebook. This is Tommy. I'm going to read his question as he wrote it. And Evie, you're the first to answer. What is your strategy for building, maintaining, and sustaining meaningful consultation with the local tribal government, and to ensure the city assembly will have respectful dialogue with tribal citizens and the impacts of raised utilities, affordable housing, and jobs, some of the things we've been talking about, government-to-government relations with Sitka tribe and tribal citizens. How will you ensure that's good?
I know there's certain amount of meetings that take place that are scheduled already. I wish there wasn't the divisiveness to begin with that seems to be there, but I would invite and hope that, you know, we have more people from the tribe participating in both governments so that they're, you know, everybody's, you know, it's an open field where you can run for office, no matter what your culture is. Dancing around this, trying to be politically correct and not say anything that would hurt anybody, I'm open to however that would happen. I want that part, you know, this was their land, and we absconded with a lot of it, you know, and, you know, the people that came in after them. And I would want that to be honored, that they were here first and they have rights and we need to honor those rights.
And Kevin?
Well, you know, it's a lot about having an open dialogue. And it's not just about one body going to the other. I think for myself, a lot of the onus comes back on, you know, going to tribal meetings and going to, you know, other events that, you know, people find important to them and to us as a community, really. I've found quite a bit of learning and joy and just richness in participating in some of those events and meetings and dialogue, really. And just, you know, like having that that two-way street open.
Aaron Bean?
Thanks for the question, Tom. I'm trying to read it myself here. It's kind of a long one.
Yeah, the question being, what is your strategy for maintaining meaningful consultation with local tribal government and communication with tribal citizens. You know, 20% of Sitka's population is Alaskan Native.
Oh.
So it's, yes.
Really?
Yes.
Being half Tlingit myself, I think I was aware of that. Shakwani Achduasak.
Gwalashish. So,
Anyhow, thank you for the question, Tom. And I think that the city does meet with the tribe a few times a year, once at ANS, and once with ANS, once with AMB, and perhaps even again with the tribe. Obviously, I would maintain that dialogue. Perhaps I'm more approachable because of my my Tlingit background. Although, you know, I couldn't say what would happen if I were elected, if I'd be treated any differently than I already am at Sitka Tribe. But anyway, things will continue to be positive. I know that I don't get a lot of negative feedback from the Tlingit community that I speak with. Tom included, I mean, but just, you know, rest assured knowing that there is a voice there in Bend now, if it needs to be there, and there's one here, if people feel more comfortable communicating with me, being Tlingit, you know, I'm open to that. But one thing is clear, that we all live in the city together, and that, you know, we're all going through the same hardships, you know, if those are happening. I think people are sharing the same problems. So, yeah, again, maintain just positive positive atmosphere, positive dialogue, and open dialogue.
Alexander?
Yeah, well, the people of our tribe are really the people of this land, and they have been for thousands of years before first contact. And it's because of this incredible resource that we have out here in Sitka Sound. I mean, this is a fantastic spot, and that's why we have the fishing fleet here that we do. There's a lot of wisdom there. There's a lot of guidance from the people who have been here and done it sustainably for a very, very long time. And incorporating their voice as much as we can is obviously only going to benefit us. Just a suggestion, the Assembly now has liaisons for all the different committees, commissions in town. Why not have a full-time Assembly commission to the tribe, or have possibly a full-time liaison from the tribe at the city? I think the more communication, the better, rather than just a few meetings a year. I think making that a regular part of our process would be a good thing.
And Aaron Swanson, same question.
Okay, I'm going to touch a little bit on what Alexander said. There is actually a tribal liaison on the City Assembly.
Well, I'm glad about that.
I was the tribal liaison the score. First 2 years I was on there. That was one part that I miss about your previous general manager, Lawrence Spotted Bird. He would come to almost every Assembly meeting and give a report. I think the same thing needs to be done at the Assembly level, where the Assembly liaison needs to go to Tribal Council every month and also give a report. I know that we have one regular scheduled meeting, government-to-government meeting a year. It should probably be more than one a year, maybe two or three. That's how I think that the relationship between the two governments could improve.
Thank you so much, Aaron Swanson. We have a question from Pete Esquiro. I'm going to give you 30 seconds to answer this question because we're actually running. Oh, Evie, did I skip you again? I'm so sorry. No? Oh, okay. Everyone's gotten a chance to answer this question that's important about relationships with the local tribal government. This question, not Pete Esquiro, Margie Esquiro wants to know where you stand on any additional sales tax on marijuana and marijuana products or an excise tax similar to the state excise tax on alcohol. So she talks about how Washington State's excise tax is 37%. Colorado has a 27.9 state tax. You have 30 seconds to answer this question, which I think is sufficient. Kevin, go ahead.
Well, to be honest, it's not something that I've looked into in detail. I think the discussion around it oftentimes is that they're obviously going to be taxed. Marijuana will obviously be taxed like other products in this town. I think, you know, it would be wise to look at whether or not it merits having an additional tax on there. And then on alcohol excise taxes, yeah, we don't tax our alcohol very much. Again, it might be wise to look at it.
Aaron Bean?
Speaking as Aaron Bean, the Assembly member, not the owner of Greenleaf. It sounds like
Greenleaf being a cannabis grow operation.
Company.
Thank
yes.
you, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Don't recuse yourself. Recuse yourself now. No recusing yourself.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Can I sit this one out? No, so the idea of taxing marijuana is obviously something that the committee had came up with. We're looking at a 2% at point of sale addition to tax already. That was the last time I was around for the conversations. Honestly, I haven't put any input in because I'm aware that, and maybe I'll bring it to Margie's attention now, that the state does have a $50 per ounce excise tax as it is at the wholesale. So as a cultivator, we're liable for that tax, and clearly I'm not for taxing anything else. I'm definitely not for taxing marijuana more than it already is.
Thank you. Alexander Allison.
Ditto on what Aaron just said right there. I think we need to look very positively at the revenue possibilities with marijuana and be as supportive of that industry as we can be.
Would you want to see an additional tax beyond 2% locally?
I'd have to look at it a little bit more closely. Mm-hmm. All I know is I'm just really excited about what I'm seeing in Colorado, Washington. I think there's some opportunities here.
Okay. And Aaron Swanson.
Yes, I would be in favor of that, Mrs. Expiro, but we have to look at it at a point to, we don't want it to get so expensive that customers are going to go to the black market, because then you'll be losing out on the tax revenue that you could gain.
Okay. And Evie?
From what I understand, while there's other ways besides the direct retail market that there's in the growing stream, and there's different ways that we can make money along the way that don't necessarily impact. But I don't want to price it out of the market. You know, I want us to make money with it.
Thank you so much, and thank you to Margie for emailing in that question.
Yes.
I think we are officially out of time. And the thing I want to say to you all, though, is just thank you so much for coming on the program. I've spoken with other members of the Assembly who've said that being on the Assembly takes between 10 and 20 extra hours of your time between going to the regular meetings, the commissions, answering citizen emails, being stopped in the grocery store. It's a big job, and I just appreciate all of you for wanting to take it on, and even more so coming on this program. So thanks so much for doing that. And
thanks for having us.
Oh, yeah. And there is another opportunity to hear from these guys, because we couldn't possibly get to everything tonight. They'll meet again at a forum on September 28th, hosted by Sika Tribe of Alaska, the Alaska Native Brotherhood Camp 1, Alaska Native Sisterhood Camp 4, and the Tlingit and Haida Sika group. That forum is 5 to 7:30 p.m. at Shikaquan Nakahiti. And the school board candidates will also be in attendance for that. Also, thanks to everyone who called in with questions that were just clear-eyed and showed a great kind of demonstration of the love that we feel for this place and wanting to do right by it. Election Day is upon us. Tuesday, October 4th, that's the day to vote. Precinct 1 is going to vote at Grace Harbor Church on Halibut Point Road, and Precinct 2 will vote at St. Gregory's Church on Lincoln Street. The city is currently taking absentee ballots on the third floor of City Hall during regular business hours. So get out and vote, because when you talk about local government, every vote really does make a difference. It could decide who is on the Assembly or who is not. You are, in fact, the most powerful people in Sika, and especially on Election Day. I want to thank our news director, Rob Woolsey, and our winter news fellow, Emily Russell, for working behind the scenes, fielding all of these calls. We're going to pick up our coverage of the municipal election tomorrow. Tune in at 6:30 for a live call-in show with your candidates for mayor. We'll have Matthew Hunter, Mary Magnuson, and Ben Maiasato talking about why they want to be your mayor tomorrow, 6:30. That's hosted by KCAW's Robert Woolsey. And I'll be back on Thursday for a discussion with two people who are voting yes on the ballot question and two people who are voting no. And we're going to talk about why. And we're going to talk about, more broadly, Sika's financial future and some of the challenges and opportunities that we face as a community. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW, Sitka. We're headed to BBC Headlines next, and that will be followed by No Assembly Required at 8 o'clock, which is hosted by Brian LeBlanc. Thanks for tuning in to KCAW Sitka.